From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today, we'll speak with the new director of Milwaukee's Office of African American Affairs. Then we'll tell you how a middle school science project turned into a successful boat inspection program in Wisconsin.
Clean Boats, Clean Waters is a pretty well-known program throughout the state. If you've gone boating, you might have seen people in blue shirts out at the boat launches who talk to boaters and they talk about invasive species.
Plus, we'll learn about some things you can do to keep kids entertained and active this summer in Milwaukee.
No young person should be without a fun opportunity. No need to just sit at home. We want to get young people off the couch, away from the video games, and into programs.
All of that is coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Milwaukee's Office of African American Affairs has a new leader. The office was created in 2016 to promote equal opportunities for Black residents in things like education, housing, job training, and employment. Melissa Buford was recently appointed by Mayor Cavalier Johnson to lead the office. She previously worked in Milwaukee Public Schools and the mayor's office. Buford tells WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell how her experiences prepared her to lead the Office of African American Affairs.
So naturally, I am an event planner. I do a lot of work in the community. I'm well connected to the community. Just for example, board chair and organizer for Garfield Days. And that ties me to a lot of different organizations, partners, and the community as a whole. So that's just one of the events that I'm involved with. And so when I joined the mayor's office, it was natural for them to kind of hand off certain events to me to organize. And so as a part of the outreach team, I can say this, I excelled in that area, which opened the door for me to move up to the policy administration and coordinator position. And that was working on policies related to the young people's safety, public safety, it's such a broad area that covers. And so, but I, again, continued to work on initiatives and events that the mayor wanted to see happen. One is MK Peace Week. That was something that I worked with and created. We changed that from the previous mayor. He kind of did this ceasefire Sabbath. And in a conversation with the mayor, I was like, hey, why don't we do a week-long initiative to focus on public safety measures? And so MK Peace Week was birthed from that conversation. Black History Recognition was another thing that I organized and started from the mayor's office, and that's highlighting African Americans in the community during the month of February, and we partnered with Bader on that. Very successful event. We've done that for 3 years now. Many other events. State of the City was organized. I organized the State of the City Christmas tree lighting ceremony. So all of these things were just kind of naturally handed over to me. And so with that being said, it was a natural fit for me to be in this position because of the connections to the community that I not only forged, but the connections that I have even previously joined in the mayor's office. And so when you think of a director position, you have to have strong ties to the community, especially in this type of position when you're talking about resources and services and events, because this office will host a lot of events. The first one that we hosted in this office was the Mom Symposium. That was something that was presented by the First Lady, Dominique Johnson, and I organized that with her. So we're looking at events and things that our community needs. And so it was kind of a natural fit for the mayor to appoint me to this position.
Well, I know I'm a few months late, but congrats on the appointment.
Thank you.
I want to segue into some of the issues that Black residents in Milwaukee face, you know, whether it's all types of inequities in all the subject areas, right? Housing, employment, education. But considering your experience, you know, all your ties to the community, what do you consider, if you had to pull, like, I don't know, two or three issues affecting Black residents in Milwaukee, what are like those top?
I would say financial literacy would definitely be one. Education would be one. And public safety. The financial literacy component. The pre-planning part of that for funeral expenses and services. And when you're in this position, you kind of have to think outside of the box and really hone in on what we see what we don't see happening in the community, and that is one thing. So there's a component under that financial literacy that will cover that. Education is another. So we're focusing on trying to help our young people with the FAFSA applications and the adults, because a lot of times the parents, you know, struggle with understanding the process as well. So that's something that we're looking at to do in the future. And then helping, you know, after high school, let's be honest, when I graduated, I'm aging myself right now. When I graduated in 95, sometimes it's like, now what? You don't know what to do. And college is just not for everybody. Some people will need to go to a trade school. Some people need an internship somewhere, an apprenticeship somewhere. And so education covers that too. So instead of a 4-year degree, someone may say, hey, I want to go to a trade school for 8 weeks. And they have the ability to make a lot of money. So education from this office, we will look at what that looks like for our young people to give them options. You want to make sure that you're giving them viable options rather than, you know, leaving it up to them to decide what they want to do, because in many cases, it's not the right thing. And then public safety, what we see happening with our street takeovers and, you know, just over the past few weeks, a lot of shootings. You know, how can we support our people? And one component of that is grief counseling. But then another component is educating them on the safeties of what needs to happen in the city. And that will mainly come from our Office of Community Wellness and Safety that will be housed in this building. So we'll work closely with them to figure out what that looks like. And it's not to say we have all of the answers, because we clearly don't, but we want to try.
So if we, you know, just hone in on like those three topics you talked about, what do you think has contributed to like those constantly being something that we deal with here in Milwaukee, Black residents specifically? Like, what's hindered us really making the impact that I guess we want to see?
If I can be truly candid, we work in silos. You know, there's a lot of organizations in the same block doing the same thing. And because those silos are in place, nobody's really, a lot of people, I'll say it that way, are not really coming together to work together. And I think that is one of the greatest hindrances that I see in the city. Just the collective group working and the collaborations, I think that is the hindrance. And my hope is to, you know, break some of those silos. Hey, you're doing the same work I'm doing. Let's come together and make it even bigger and better. And so I feel like if we can get through that barrier, I think we'd be in a much better position.
Outside of the work in silos, I don't know if you, are there any other challenges you can think of that like might impact you trying to address this?
I'll say the awareness of this office, you know, making sure that people understand what this office does and what we're here to do and how we're here to serve. And so that is one reason why we feel that an open house would be beneficial, to help the community understand we're here in the community and we're here to help you. That is a barrier right now, just the lack of visibility, if I can say it that way, or people not really understanding what we do here.
I guess I want to keep talking about like just how you see, you know, this office under your leadership kind of doing things differently with the community. And that's not even to say like past leadership wasn't doing it, but I just wonder what's going to be different about your approach.
So as you can see, we have a lot of office space here. I want to make sure that our community understands that the majority of the resources and services here will be free, number one. And then number two, understanding, and I mentioned this, you know, earlier, understanding what the needs are. I don't want to have resources and services in this building that are not really in the forefront of people's minds or what they really need, but understanding and assessing what they need. And so under my leadership, I think I want to really focus on understanding the needs and implementing services that will meet those needs. And the challenges that they face. So, for example, if we, you know, roll out and launch something and we see that it's really not, you know, making any moves or anything in a year or so, I'm not afraid to make a change. I'm not afraid to say, hey, this isn't working. Let's revisit this. Let's go back to the drawing board. Let's figure out, you know, why this isn't working and is it really needed? So I guess that will be the biggest change under my leadership, is I'm going to have both ears open and both eyes open, because I want to hear what people are saying. I want that feedback. I want the negative feedback. I want the positive feedback. But I want to make sure that we see change. Whatever we're doing, I want to see the change. I want to see it affecting people in a positive way.
Just talking more about your hopes for the future of this office, if there's like a word, an emotion, something like, what's really leading you in this role?
Passion. I'm a product of 53206, brought up on 21st and Wright, and I saw a lot. I experienced a lot. I can remember being on the porch in a drive-by shooting taking place and finding out that a neighbor down the street was shot and now paralyzed. I can remember walking to the store and having to run home because, you know, of adults making the wrong decision. I'll leave it that way. And so the passion for me is I want to make sure that those that are in those certain areas of the city, they have options to get out, to see this, to see the world, to see the city. Something the mayor says all the time is a lot of our young people never even get to experience seeing the lakefront. And so for me, it's the passion of, I was a fortunate one to, you know, go back to school, receive the bachelor's degree, receive the master's degree. But I want to make sure that that is every person's experience, as the way I've experienced it, that I can reach. I know I can't do it all, but I want to try. And so it's the passion in me that, you know, I was 40 years old when I received my bachelor's degree and 42, 43 when I received my master's. And I want to make sure that we are setting our young people up for success. I don't want them to have to wait until they're 40 like I did to have those options in front of them. So it's the passion of the work for me that's driving me.
Just really quick, I also want to hone in on the young people because we see that they are going through a lot in the community. They're experiencing a lot of trauma, and it's impacting them in ways that they're making some questionable decisions. And I think that maybe there aren't people in positions who know exactly what angle to come from to really reach the youth. So what more do you think the youth are in need of in Milwaukee?
I can answer that without even thinking twice. I spent over 20 years with MPS, started off as a secretary, then I moved up to the finance department, and then ultimately a special education teacher. They need their parents. We have to figure out a way to reach the parents. Just so many times, you know, parent-teacher conferences are empty. You can go a whole school year and never have any type of engagement with a parent. And so for me, I think it's beyond just the young people. We've got to figure out a way to reach the parents. You know, times have changed. Growing up, we had to be in the house at a certain time. Our parents had to know who we were with. And we just, even then, didn't get to go any and everywhere we wanted to. We had rules. And it's not to say that some parents are not doing the right thing, because some young people just make wrong decisions regardless of the proper raising that they have. But at the same time, I've seen the majority, we've got to reach these parents. And so it goes beyond just the young people. It's a parenting issue. And I'm not afraid to say that. It is a parenting issue for the most part.
No, that's real. And I definitely get that. So in what ways can the Office of African American Affairs address that? I know there's like a dad's program here, but yeah, what else?
We have annually a mom symposium, and we just started. It was just the second year, so we're trying to figure out how to expand that. In full transparency, there are things that we're working on that I'm not really at liberty to just mention just yet. However, I think one of the things too is you have a lot of single parent homes, and you can't work and be home at the same time. And so one of the things that we created in the mayor's office while I was there was a program called Hello Summer. It's a website where parents can go to and figure out how to sign their children up for summer activities. That's a great tool, because if you leave them at home by themselves, you don't know what they're doing. But if I take them to this approved summer program, they're not only getting summer enrichment, they're getting extracurricular activities, they're building social skills, social emotional learning skills, all of those, SEL, all of those things. That's one tool. But the parenting classes are going to be important. Like, we have Fatherhood Summit coming up in October, and it's geared toward helping men. And one of the things we did, you know, back in the mayor's office was change it to a coalition. And so one of the first things I did when I, you know, took on this position, I spoke with Daryl Davison, who is the community engagement and achievement manager. I said, I need a team of men to plan the Fatherhood Summit this year. Men want to hear from other men. Men want to hear from other men that overcame challenges. And so we have a network and a coalition of men that are going to plan the Fatherhood Summit. And I want to see what that looks like so that we can do quarterly meetings to support these men. And then for the Mom Symposium, it'll be the same thing. Once we really jump in and get it organized, we need to offer more parenting classes and more figure out, you tell us, how can we support you? So that's one of the things that I'm looking to do.
I want to allow some space for you to share any final thoughts you have.
I would like for people to give us an opportunity to serve the community without negativity, allow us to be where we need to be. I would like the community to support us. And I also would like to the community to know that we're here for them, not just as an Office of African-American Affairs, but the City of Milwaukee. You know, we are the Office of African American Affairs, but we don't turn away anyone. And so I just want people to know we're here to serve them and we're in the community.
Melissa Buford is the new director of Milwaukee's Office of African American Affairs. She spoke with WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell. And did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen on demand. In about 15 minutes, we'll look at what Milwaukee Rec is offering for summer programming. But first, we'll learn about Wisconsin's successful boat inspection program that helps fight invasive species and how it got its start in a middle school classroom. That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. If you've gone boating on one of Wisconsin's lakes this summer, chances are you've met a volunteer reminding you to clean your boat. The Clean Boats, Clean Waters program trains volunteers to perform these boat checks. It also educates people about preventing the spread of aquatic invasive species. It's one of the most successful boat inspection programs in the country, and it all started as a middle school science project here in Wisconsin. Introduced is a podcast about the Great Lakes that recently uncovered this story. To learn more, Lake Effect's Excret Nunez is joined by Bonnie Willison, the executive producer of the podcast, and Marie Stewart, one of the middle schoolers who started the program.
Bonnie, for people who haven't listened to Introduced, can you tell me what this project is and what the podcast is about?
Yeah, so Introduced is a podcast about the Great Lakes and aquatic invasive species science. I'm a producer for Wisconsin Sea Grant, and we do Great Lakes outreach, education. We have people based throughout the state who help with Great Lakes issues, and so I tell a lot of Great Lakes stories. The lakes have changed so much over the last few hundred years. And a lot of that is due to people coming in and people bringing species that weren't here before. And we've had waves and waves of invasive species in the Great Lakes. And we like to tell those stories on Introduced. We talk to people who study these species, who have different interesting stories about stopping the spread of invasive species, people dealing with their effects. And so that's the Introduced podcast.
And you recently wrapped up season 3 of the podcast, and in the last episode, you uncover the story of a popular boat inspection program called Clean Boats, Clean Waters, but it has a really unique backstory. Can you tell me about it?
Sure, yeah. So we were trying to think of ideas for season 3 of the podcast, and Clean Boats, Clean Waters is a pretty well-known program throughout the state. If you've gone boating, you might have seen people in blue shirts out at the boat launches who talk to boaters and they talk about invasive species. So I knew about the program, but one of my colleagues said, hey, I heard this program was started by middle schoolers in northern Wisconsin. And I was like, what? I kind of Googled it. There's not really much out there about this story. And so we wanted to kind of get to the bottom of it. And so I was able to connect with Marie, who started the program back in middle school. For the other folks, I was like, I want to talk to one of the teachers involved. And so I want to talk to more people who were at the DNR back then to see, you know, how did this program get to be from a 1 year school project to now like a 20 year running state funded program. So I did my internet sleuthing. I called people and tried to find contact information. Marie was a big help with connecting me to some people. So yeah, it was a challenge because a lot of these people, you know, this story takes place in like 2003, 2004. And a lot of people around then, you know, have been retired from the DNR and from Extension for like 20 years. So I was really glad to be able to talk to them and kind of record this story for really the first time for some of these people.
Yeah, really piece it together. I love when the teacher that you spoke with, you could like hear her bringing out a scrapbook and like reliving those memories. So that was really nice. So Bonnie, you mentioned that one of the sources you spoke to was Marie, who's here with us. So Marie, I want to ask you, how did you even get the idea to look into aquatic invasive species prevention when you were only 12 years old?
Yeah, so the competition, which was put on by BEAR and the National Science Foundation at the time, and we had an opportunity for seventh and eighth grade students to form teams and come up with a challenge or problem that was facing our community, and then a solution for that problem, which was supposed to be somewhat science-based. And so myself and the two other students, one was also in seventh grade along with me, and the other was an eighth grader. And we were just thinking about, you know, where we lived and what would be a unique issue to tackle. Kind of like I said in the podcast, you know, we knew that we weren't going to be, you know, solving like world hunger or world peace with this, but something that really directly affected our community. And, you know, Minocqua is a big tourist area, and lakes and lake recreation is probably the largest part of that. And so we thought that would be a good angle and something to differentiate us with something to do with the lakes and natural resources around us. And I think originally we were looking at focusing on zebra mussels. And then as we looked into it more, we found that Eurasian water milfoil was kind of prevalent and more of an issue in the community at that time. And so that's how we landed on that as our project.
Yeah. You know, to be honest with you, listening to this podcast is the first time I ever heard of Eurasian water milfoil. So I was wondering if you could explain what it is. And I guess ultimately why you said, you know, you're between zebra mussels and Eurasian water milfoil, but why did you decide on this?
Yeah, so Eurasian water milfoil, obviously an aquatic invasive species, and it's a plant. And so as Miss I call her Miss Ehlers because I can't, you know, I was raised by a teacher, so you have to use teacher speak. But, you know, she said it looks like carrot tops, which is probably pretty accurate. And it kind of grows and blooms and like can cover really the surface of the lake. And it just, not only is it ugly, but it can really disrupt the, you know, natural ecosystem and habitat of the lake. And so, and it spreads primarily by people, right? So kind of like every problem in our natural world, like we are a big instigator and issue. And so a lot of it was being spread from lake to lake by being on someone's boat, from them recreating on the lake and then not cleaning off their boat and going to a different lake. And the zebra mussels, I think, kind of similar thing. And they came in, I believe, this was a long time ago that I really studied this, but, you know, through the Great Lakes. And they just were not as common in our Northwoods lakes. And, you know, I think like the Eurasian water milfoil, you can look out at a lake that is infested with Eurasian water milfoil, and it just looks unhealthy, right? And so huge tourist area. So we want these beautiful, pristine lakes that people can use and enjoy that are also going to stay healthy. And I think too, for us, it was like, this is something everyone can agree on in this community. And I think that's why the program is still so powerful today, because everyone can agree in the Northwoods that we want beautiful, pristine, healthy lakes. It is not really a partisan issue, or, you know, shouldn't be, but that's something that everyone wants. And so we knew that it would be something that everyone could get behind.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Wow, you guys are so incredibly smart. I don't even know what I was doing at 12. So that's amazing.
Peaked when I was 12.
So. Well, Bonnie, you also talk about this in the podcast. How big of an issue were aquatic invasive species during the early 2000s in Wisconsin? Like, were people paying attention to this?
You know, they're not new. Since colonization, people have been purposely or accidentally bringing in these species. Now, when you go to lakes, you basically at every single boat landing, there's a sign about cleaning, draining, and drying your boat, educating people about invasive species. You'll probably see clean boats, clean waters inspectors. Wisconsin is really at the forefront in leading the nation for aquatic invasive species like education and management. That's now. Back in the early 2000s, it was a really different story. People were just starting to become aware of aquatic invasive species, and the state really had no budget for it. So there were no signs at boat landings. There were no really education efforts going on. So in the early 2000s, there were zebra mussels starting to move in from the Great Lakes. There was more Eurasian water milfoil kind of being spread from the southern part of the state where there's more population, more people up to the North Woods where people have cabins. So the problem at that time was kind of, how do we get all this information out to people? And also these things were understudied too. So now we've done, you know, decades worth of research on Eurasian water milfoil. And we know that when it gets into lakes, sometimes it really does take off. Sometimes the lake kind of evens out and it doesn't really become a problem. But back then, we didn't really have that science. And so a lot of people were alarmed, I think, about the spread of aquatic invasive species from my research.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Marie, you and your classmates ultimately won the grand prize in this like Shark Tank style competition against other students from across the country. You won a $25,000 grant to put this idea you and your classmates came up with to work. How did you end up implementing this work?
With a lot of help. So, you know, we were like preteens and teenagers, and I think we knew enough to know that we needed good support. So, and I think this was talked about in the podcast, and Lisa, you know, brought it up of, we were so excited that we won the grand prize. And at the same time, it was like, now we have to pull this off, I think was the word she used, which I thought was great. And what ended up being successful was that she connected us, or helped us connect, with Laura Felda and Sandy Wickman. They were instrumental and really helped connect us with the right people, helped us organize how like the educational events were going to go that we decided to put on, the workshops, helped us gather volunteers to put kits together. We knew that the solution was education and training people to become advocates, right? It was all word of mouth and changing behaviors. And that, of course, takes time. But we knew that that would be the most powerful solution. But yeah, like over the first year, it was just sort of that grassroots effort began, and we started connecting with people and got a few hundred volunteers, and it went on from there. And I'm just really proud of what it's become. Like I said, I feel like I peaked in middle school, because it's probably the coolest thing I'm ever going to do. And, you know, it's funny now that this program is so prolific and everyone kind of knows about it if they boat at all in Wisconsin. And it's something that, you know, wouldn't exist without myself and the two others. So, yeah, we just had a lot of help, and it's really taken on a life of its own.
It really has. So it's been 20 years since this program launched. Bonnie, can you talk about what it has evolved into today?
Yeah. So I think the original student project, Marie, you were going around to like northern Wisconsin, neighboring counties to the Minocqua area. Now there are boat inspections at so many different counties throughout the state. There's a ton of volunteers, a lot of paid staff now, and having those people have been able to check so many different boats and talk to so many different people every year about aquatic invasive species at boat landings. So, whereas maybe the first year of the program, 2004, they talked to, I think it was like 6,000 people. The next year, they were able to talk to 30,000 people, and that number has just gone up every year. It's gotten a lot of attention for being really successful. So the idea has kind of been taken from Wisconsin to a region-wide program. So it's called the Great Lakes Landing Blitz, and it's kind of a focused effort around the 4th of July, like that kind of time period, where all the Great Lakes states try to get as many like volunteers out there as possible to talk to boaters across the region and even into Canada. So if people want to volunteer for something like this, if they're in Wisconsin or not, you should look up the Great Lakes Landing Blitz.
Before we wrap up, Marie, I want to ask you, did you think this program would be where it is today? What are your thoughts on it?
Absolutely not. I never would have imagined that it would take off like it has. I am just really proud of it. I think for me personally, I work in the nonprofit space now, and I think that's really because of this project and seeing what a difference people can make, even from a young age. So it's been really impactful for me personally. And just to see again, like how many people have made it their own and become really passionate about it is really inspiring. I care very deeply about conservation and about our lakes, and I really feel like this is something that's going to endure for a long time, and it feels great to have been a part of that. It was a little bit of luck, you know? I think we had a great idea, but not all great ideas become what this has become. So I'm just so glad that it did.
Well, Bonnie and Marie, thank you both so much for sharing this story with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks
Thank
for
you so
having
much.
us.
Marie Stewart is one of the founders of the Clean Boats, Clean Waters program. Bonnie Willison is the video and podcast producer at Wisconsin Sea Grant. They both spoke with Lake Effect's Excarit Nunez. Summer is officially here. And while summer break can be a dream for kids, it can be a nightmare for parents looking to keep their kids busy. Enter Milwaukee Recreation's summer programming. WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez went to WIC Playfield to talk with Milwaukee Rec's Callie Norton about the programming that's available, starting as early as this week.
So starting June 23rd, we're going to do 15 summer playground sites, which that means is we're going to have enrichment activities and play opportunities at all 15 of our sites across the city. This includes play leaders that are there on site from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. doing leading games and activities, along with community partners come out to the playgrounds, including Betty Brin, STEAM Milwaukee, AWE, the library will be out at our playgrounds doing free summer programming. It involves all different types of activities, enrichment that you can think of. And then we'll also be providing 2 meals a day at our 15 playgrounds, all free. It's all drop-in. The ages are recommended 6 to 17 for people to come with their kids to have a safe place to play that's engaging and just provides them something to do throughout the summer that's free.
Oh my goodness, that's incredible. And I'm guessing these 15 sites are all across the city and parents can find out the locations online?
Yes, so you can go to MilwaukeeRec.net, so MKEREC.net. Go online. If you Google Milwaukee Recreation Playgrounds, summer roving activities, any of that would pop up what activities we have out that day, whether it's our skate van, my rec and roll is going to be out there doing our Gaga Pit, arts and crafts, lots of different activities. You just have to go online and see what at your local playground is going to be happening there.
Okay, now you're talking about the mobile units, which I have a lot of questions about, because it feels like there's a ton that's offered. So tell me about the mobile units and what people can expect to see if they find one in their neighborhood.
Yeah, so if you see the blue van that says MKE Rec on it, that is more than likely one of my three mobile units vans. So that means we have a skate van that people can rent out. They also do go to the playgrounds to do free programming. We're going to be doing summer skate sessions on Fridays throughout one of the playgrounds throughout the summer, just to encourage people to get back out there and skating on roller skates. We'll have roller skating helpers out there and guides out there to just encourage people to get back out there skating again. We also have carnival games that people can rent out that we bring to the playgrounds as well. We have our rec and roll, which comes with arts and crafts. All of our activities include music, fun staff that are engaging, doing activities for birthday parties, for community events. I know we do a lot of our national nights out. So it's really just a way for people to have recreation come to them and bring items to them instead of the idea of like going to a rec center to get these activities.
I'm also curious if like this signals the end of rollerblades, because I know that there was like a roller skate, rollerblade, little bit of a competition, MKE Rec throwing all of their weight behind roller skates. Is this pretty much donezo for rollerblades?
No, you can bring your rollerblades. It's just easier to buy mass roller skates than rollerblades. That's all it is. But it's the idea of an outdoor roller rink. That's the whole idea of it. And we even have some adult skate nights that we're going to be doing at WIC in July and August that are themed just to get folks out here to do a fun little date night.
Hey, amazing. Kelly, thank you so much. I'm going to talk
with
Layton right now.
All right.
My name is Layton Cooper. I serve as the recreation coordinator here for Milwaukee Public Schools, and I have the wonderful job of making sure young people are having fun, having a blast over the course of the summer, and being safe.
Okay, I'm very curious about what programming looks like. Okay. You get the kids in there. What can they expect throughout the course of a day or a summer?
Our program varies per program throughout the week. What's required is the morning sessions tend to have some academic enrichment programming. We don't want to get away from that too much. We pride ourselves on helping to curb summer slide, and so we provide academic enrichment, and it should look fun. So various activities around culture, math, arts, reading. And then a second half of our program typically always focuses on fun events. So we have contracted services, vendors coming in, karate, again, additional arts, dance, tons of things going on, field trips that students are taking. And so it's just an opportunity to make sure that our young people are just well-rounded and they have a full experience in our programs.
I also thought I heard something about culinary classes.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about those.
So a number of our programs will have an opportunity to participate in culinary arts programming. So we have a couple of different vendors, one that's coming in and helping to teach our staff on how to work with young people around culinary arts. So they bring in all the ingredients and students have an opportunity to put food together in school spaces. Additionally, we have a summer Excel program. It's somewhat set up kind of like a Iron Chef situation where young people have different recipes that they can select from. They learn and put it together. We divide the school up, the program up into two, and we have guest judges that are able to come and test all of the dishes. And, you know, some of these dishes are pretty detailed. Young people do a really good job of following, you know, a recipe to the letter. And it's fun being a guest judge every year. It's always one of the highlights of my week. I look forward to testing and seeing what the young people come up with.
All right, Layton, you got my contact info if you need someone else.
You're definitely welcome to come out. We'll definitely get you out there.
It's funny because I'm thinking when I was that age, I was just making like Pop-Tarts and ham and cheese sandwiches. So
and grilled cheeses.
Absolutely. This is incredible.
Yeah, no, I've seen some dishes ranging from pastas. We've seen multiple chicken dishes. We give the young people an opportunity to pick out what they would like to do. And, you know, our instructors that are teaching the course do a phenomenal job and just really helping to teach young people best practices in the kitchen, being safe. It's a cool opportunity.
Amazing. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to, like, shout out or that you think is important for parents to know?
Yeah, you know, we have programs, again, I think I mentioned previously, 60 locations throughout the community. It's an opportunity for every single young person that lives in the city to come out and participate. No young person should be without a fun opportunity. No need to just sit at home. We want to get young people off the couch, away from the video games, and into programs so that they can socialize with their peers, have fun, learn something new, and just have a blast.
Being in the neighborhood, one of the tragedies is Washington Park's pool never having been open while I've been here. And I know for my little ones in the family that they love to find a place to get wet, splash around, have fun in the sun, cool off. And now we've got this in WIC. We've got this beautiful splash pad that is being utilized. I think there's probably like a dozen kids, almost of all ages, over there. Can you tell me about the splash pads, where they are, what families can expect, and what the plan is with those?
Yeah, so we have splash pads, wading pools all over the city. Again, if you go to milwaukeerec.net, you can look up our wading pools and splash pads, which ones are open near you throughout the summer, especially on our hot days. We even stay open a little later on weekends. We stay open even a little later, especially if it's going to be hot out there. So yeah, that's a big mission of all of our parks that we have been renovating, is to get in these splash pads, to get in a place to have a cool spot, to have that water access, because we know how important it is for everybody to have access to it. So yeah, if you go to milwaukeerec.net, it will tell you what we have available and what's operating.
We got the splash pads, we got the slides, we got monkey bars, we got all different types of swings. So even if the kids are scared to get on, it's a buddy swing over there you can get on. It's football field over there. It's a basketball court. It's a baseball field. It's really nice. I'm Venus. I'm here with my future leaders, daycare, child care center.
Tell me about the summertime, also having a place for kids to go that's safe, that you have adult supervision, that they can go and be active together.
So it's real nice for us to be able to come up here. It's not too far from our inner city where they got to play at. But up here, like I said, again, it's more cleaner. It's safer up here. The kids feel safe. We actually have a lot of more parents who is willing to come out in this area because of the safeness that it is. So we really enjoy it. It helped us bring out the families too, because if I invite the parents come, some of my parents are here today with me just because it's a nice park.
Any final message that you'd want to say to other parents, moms, folks with young ones that maybe don't know about places like this, either here at WIC or across the city, that you'd encourage them to get out and take advantage of this?
Yep, I would encourage everybody to get out, let these kids play, let them run, get off them games so they could just come out here and run, be a busybody. By the time, I guarantee y'all, by the time they get home, they're going to be ready to eat and go to bed.
I don't think there's a stronger endorsement than that.
No, I'm just saying, it's just fun. You can have family time. Y'all can, the water don't go off to 7:30 tonight. So even if you are a late parent that get off at 3, you still have time to make it for a few hours just to come out here with your family, enjoy, and have a blast.
Is that a news reporting?
Yeah.
You know it is.
Reporting live from 51st and Capitol with all these kids.
I just recorded too. Yep.
Yeah, he just recorded to
all. Wait, you make a TikTok of us?
Yep. I'm going to be like, it's the goodest news reporter in the best world.
That was WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez reporting. He spoke with Callie Norton and Leighton Cooper with Milwaukee Rec, along with Venus Brown from My Future Leaders Daycare. We've got a new season of Bubbler Talk going, and we need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. From severe storms to extreme heat, we'll look at ways to stay safe during the summer months next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Last week, we saw severe storms roll through the area. And over the weekend, Milwaukee was under an extreme heat warning, with temperatures reaching into the 90s. Summer weather comes with the threat of other emergencies, including tornadoes and flooding. Lake Effect's Sam Woods is joined by Wisconsin Emergency Management's Public Information Officer, Katie Rusnellos, to talk about preparing for emergencies this summer season.
There's a whole host of other weather things that can happen during the warmer months when you get into spring and summer. You get thunderstorms that can produce high winds. It can produce heavy rains that can cause flooding. There's lightning. And then there's also tornadoes. And the thing is, tornadoes can happen any time of year. And we saw that in 2024 in February, where that was the first February tornado in the state. But there has been a tornado recorded in Wisconsin in every single month of the year. So some of these things aren't just based on spring or summer. Sometimes they can happen in fall and winter as well.
So when thinking about extreme spring and summer weather here in Wisconsin, what are some things that you'd like us to keep in mind?
Some things to keep in mind with severe weather season is when there is flooding, whether that's river flooding or flash flooding, please do not drive your vehicle into flooded water. You don't know how deep it is. You don't know what's in it. The same goes for walking in the water. We've all seen those videos of people sloshing in the water, walking up and down the streets, or kids playing in it. The problem with that is you don't know what's in the water. There could be liquids that are contaminating the water. There could be dangerous items that you don't see because they're covered in water that you walk on. And with floodwaters, it only takes 6 inches to knock someone over. And that could potentially be a deadly situation that you would find yourself in. Other things to pay attention to would be tornadoes. If a tornado occurs, you'll hear an outdoor siren sometimes if your community has them. That's not 100% foolproof, because think about in those summer months when you have all your windows closed and the air conditioner is running, you're not going to hear that outdoor siren. So it's important to have multiple ways to receive emergency alerts. That could include having those emergency wireless emergency alerts on your phone turned on for emergency weather information. What happens with those is the National Weather Service will send then a little alert to your area where you are located at, and it will tell you, hey, there's a tornado warning. There's, you know, take shelter now. Other things would be having an NOAA weather radio, and those are good things to have because not only can you plug them in to an electrical outlet, they also can have batteries in there. So if there's a power outage, you can still get those alerts even though the power's not on because it is a battery-operated radio. And other ways to get those alerts are getting a weather app on your phone that can give those weather alerts to you, getting a phone call from family and friends saying, hey, I just saw that there's a tornado near your area, or even getting that information from your local TV or radio station.
Living in the Midwest has taught me one thing, is that the weather is constantly changing. And while we may be having tornadoes today, that it may very well be 95 degrees tomorrow. So thinking of summer heat emergencies, how do I know when I'm just feeling warm versus I am feeling so warm that I should seek medical attention?
So when you're feeling warm, that's one thing, as you were saying, but some things to look out for would be heat stroke, heat exhaustion, those issues. You might be having some heavy sweating and you get cold, pale, clammy skin, fast, weak pulse. That's for heat exhaustion. For heat stroke, your body temperature is actually going to be rising up. So think like a fever. So if your temperature is 103 degrees or higher, that's very dangerous temperature to have. And if you have heat stroke, call 911 right away. It's very important to do that. And then if you are with someone who you think has heat stroke, you want to move that person to a cooler place and help lower the person's temperature with cool cloths or cool bath. Just don't give them anything to drink.
What are some common misconceptions that you hear regarding spring and summer emergency preparedness?
One of the things that I do hear occasionally from people who might be moving up to Wisconsin from a warmer climate is, I'm safe because I'm used to the heat. That's not true. No matter how familiar you are with the hot weather, the risk of heat illness still is high. So you still got to look out for those heat exhaustion, heat stroke type symptoms. And the key thing is, when those hotter days come around, is to make sure that you drink plenty of water. And with that, there's the caveat that while drinking water and staying hydrated is crucial, just drinking it alone is not always going to be helpful. You want to have something that has those electrolytes in there that helps maintain your body functions and prevent those heat-related illnesses.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining me on Lake Effect. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
Katie Rusnellos is Wisconsin Emergency Management's Public Information Officer. She spoke with Lake Effect's Sam Woods. And that wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll learn about Just Us and Books, a local program that reads books to kids. Thanks so much for joining us right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.